Hello and welcome to All You Ever Wanted to Know, and today Heart to Heart with David Disty. The last couple of months we've had some incredible guests joining us on the program. That trend is going to continue today. First of all, David, welcome back. Good to see you again.
Good to be back. Thank you, Jordan.
Yes, and also joining us on the line from Gatineau, Quebec, Dr. Paul Griegman, a clinical psychologist and also professor of psychology at the Université du Québec en Ottawa. I hope I got that right, Dr. Griegman. Thank you so much. I lived in Quebec for 6 weeks in high school. I loved it. And I guess some of it's still carrying over now. I'm glad I can use it in my job now in this particular time. But excited to chat with you today about emotionally focused therapy. David, first of all, to you, tell us how you were introduced to this.
Well, I was introduced to emotionally focused therapy, or EFT, early on in my training in counseling. And it really struck me as something that goes deep to the heart of the issue of what's going on between people. So it was really powerful in my own life, and then powerful being able to see it in play with other people as well. So yeah, Dr. Griegman, who is on the line with us, he is a certified trainer in EFT and has worked with Sue Johnson extensively. So Sue Johnson is the one who founded EFT, and Dr. Griegman's been an important part of that journey too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure.
So tell me a little bit about your story with EFT, Dr. Griegman.
Sure. Well, I was I did my graduate work at the University of Ottawa, and at that time, Sue Johnson was a professor in the psychology department, so she taught introductory graduate-level courses in couple therapy, and I had done some work in attachment theory before that, but it's been mostly kind of looking at attachment styles and so on, and it was the first time I had ever come across the actual practical application of this theory, and it just blew me away, and I was also really, really interested in working with Sue because she has such an energetic personality and an energetic style. So she taught me at Ottawa U, and then she supervised my clinical work with couples when I was an intern at the University of Ottawa, and then also was my secondary supervisor when I was doing my certification for the College of Psychologists. So EFT is really, it's the only couples approach I've ever practiced autonomously, and I've been practicing it now for about 13 years.
Excellent. So what is EFT?
EFT, emotionally focused therapy, it's a humanistic, experiential, and systemic psychotherapy that's based largely on attachment theory, or attachment science, as we're calling it more and more these days, just because there's been so much evidence supporting the fact that human beings are wired for close emotional connections, and whenever we perceive something that might possibly be threatening these close emotional connections, we have some predictable reactions. We tend to get really afraid, we tend to get really sad, and sometimes we might even get angry because we're trying to reestablish or maintain that kind of close connection. And one of the really neat things about EFT is it's, to my knowledge, the only couple therapy that really, really includes in its case conceptualizations and in the way that we actually treat our clients this attachment science to this degree, where we're always trying to get couples to realize, first of all, just how important they are to each other, the kinds of things they feel when things are going well, and because we see them in therapy generally when things aren't going well. And we try to help them then express to each other sort of the underlying emotions and needs that maybe don't get addressed when they're busy fighting with each other or having some kind of conflict. So EFT is really about helping people recognize what they feel. And it's usually in a relationship that's having some trouble, it's usually things like sadness, hurt, fear of losing the other person, longing to feel close to the other person. It helps couples realize those things, but also helps them realize then what they do in their relationship that might be preventing that from happening. So if I tend to be really, really critical of my partner because I'm trying to get her to respond to me and I don't think she wants to, or I don't think she is, well, I might be longing for her, but what comes out of my mouth might be criticism, or I might do or say things that might be hurtful to her. And so we would then dance together in a certain way, and the therapy is really about helping each partner realize what his or her role in that dance is so that they can then change it.
Mm-hmm.
That's I could talk about this for hours, so please feel free to in at any time.
Excellent. It's so powerful when people realize that emotion that's behind the anger. So often we get stuck in conflict with the anger, but then to be able to experience that sadness, that longing for each other, and to be in a relationship in that place instead of the angry place.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Because we find that most of the things that people fight about, okay, whether it's household chores, whether it's money, whether it's sex, whether it's how to raise the kids, whatever it might be, okay, couples that feel, people in relationships who really feel the emotional availability of their partner, a couple things happen. They're either A, able to resolve those problems themselves, or if they can't, let's say they don't agree 100%, it doesn't become dramatic. It doesn't spin out of control. So we know that when couples have, and in therapy, you've probably heard this, David, you know, people will say things like, you know, we don't even remember what got the fight started.
Absolutely,
right? It's not about the money or the, you know, should we buy a cottage or not? I mean, those are important things. Those are important problems. But when it gets to be really intense emotionally, when people start criticizing each other or defending or stonewalling and shutting the other person out or shutting down or pulling away, well, then something else is going on. And then it's about these basic messages of, you know, do I matter to you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you love me and respect me the way I am? And that's what's driving all of this blaming and criticism and defensiveness. And so we in EFT, we go directly at that. So we can help couples feel safer with each other and closer to each other so that they can go back and have a look at these important practical problems, but without all of the drama that can accompany them. And it really is a drama. You know, when we're not sure, we might know it in our mind, but if we don't really feel like our partner's there for us, that's a scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
If that person's important to us, right? You know, that's a frightening thing. That's a stressful thing. It's a sad people feel. They say things like, I feel so alone, right? So that's what we get clients talking about, and we get them to open up to each other about that and to learn how to comfort each other, because when people feel like they have that safe place that they can go back to when they feel stressed out or when there's some kind of threat in their lives, that's actually what makes people feel closer. And it doesn't just happen in couples either. You know, if you think about what distinguishes friends from acquaintances, right? Usually it's people who are there for you when the chips were down and you weren't doing well, and that person or those people in their own way, they were able to say to you, you know, I love you the way you are, and I'm here, and I'm not going away. That's who we tend to feel close to, and that's what we do in EFT, is we get people to talk to each other on that level.
So when a couple's in this place where they're fighting instead of talking on that level, how do they move towards feeling like they've got each other's back, that they're there for each other?
Yeah. It's a process, and the first part of it is to help them become more aware of the way that they're dancing together. So in therapy, I'll often say things like, okay, I'm going to slow you guys down. I'm going to slow you down, and I want you to tell me a bit more about what that's like for you. You know, when you say to me right now, yeah, he's never there, what does that feel like inside? Can you describe that to me? And I'm trying to get that person to say, you know, I feel kind of lonely, or I feel kind of sad. So it's helping that person become aware of that feeling. But then, okay, and what do you do when you feel that way? Do you go to your partner and say, you know, I really miss you, and I feel really sad, and I just need you to come and be with me? Oh, no, I don't do that. I don't do that at all. I'll probably tell them, yeah, you were out again, you know, playing hockey with your friends 4 nights this week. I was like, okay, so inside you're kind of feeling this longing, you're kind of feeling this desire to be close, but kind of what comes out is more of a kind of a telling him, you know, what he's doing wrong. And then I'll check with the other person and say, you know, what do you do when things aren't going well in the couple? And that person will usually say things like, well, I defend myself, or I kind of hide behind a wall, or I try to justify things. And then a similar process, and what does that feel like for you? When you say you feel this criticism, what's that like inside? And often people say, well, I feel like I'm no good, or, you know, it actually kind of stresses me out because I don't want to lose her, I don't want to lose the relationship. And so we get them first to be more aware of that, aware of what they're feeling, aware of what they do when they feel it. And then as therapy progresses, that's when we encourage them to open up about these kind of underlying vulnerabilities, because that's what they are. People feel like they're either not living up to their partner's expectations, and that hurts. And it hurts because the other person's so important. So as therapy progresses, once the couple has identified that dance or that cycle as the enemy, that's when they're no longer saying, okay, she's the problem or he's the problem. The problem is the way we interact together. That's when we get them to start opening up more about just how important they are to each other, how much they need each other, how much it hurts when they feel abandoned or if they feel really, really criticized. And then what they can do, and we do talk about practical things that they can actually do then to foster this kind of a closeness and safety that maybe has been missing in the relationship. So it's a real process. And then after that, that's when in therapy we would have a look more closely at some of the more practical issues after having established what we call that secure bond in the relationship.
Mm-hmm. So once you've got that secure bond, then you can engage with each other about these tough issues in a different way.
You
know that you have each other's back again, and you can go through pretty much any conversation with that secure attachment.
Exactly. That's exactly mm-hmm. the point. But I do want to make one clarification, though. It's not about knowing that the other has our back. It's feeling it. A lot of times clients will say, you know, I know she loves me. I know it in my mind. I don't feel it.
Absolutely.
That's what this therapy is about, is creating these moments where people open up to each other, and it can be very powerful in session. They might cry. Sometimes mm-hmm. it might be tears of sadness, but sometimes of joy. But it's basically these new relational events that happen in therapy that the couple can then practice at home that involve emotion, that involve feeling like he's got my back or she's got my mm-hmm. back. We'll say things like, do you see the look on his face when he says, I'm so scared to lose you? Do you see the tears when she says, I need you so much and I feel really lonely? Or when he says that, right? So we're really working with the perception of emotional experiences and emotional availability.
Yeah, that's so powerful when somebody can look at their partner and see something other than the anger or whatever they've mm-hmm. expected to find in the other person's eyes, to see that softness, the sadness, what's behind the conflict.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. I like one of the things that really stood out to me that you said is seeing the cycle as the enemy, the dance as the enemy. It's not the other person that you're fighting, but there's this interaction that's going on between you two.
Both people get sucked into it, and mm-hmm. couples will have different names for it, right? I've had couples talk about the vortex that they mm-hmm. get sucked into, or some people will use terms like the dance or the trap or things like that. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's extremely rare in my experience that it's one person's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that, too, is something that's really unique about EFT, is it's a very non-pathologizing approach to couple therapy. So we don't tend to say, oh, well, this person, you know, has this disorder, so we're not going to treat him, or, you know, maybe that person might need to do some work on that individual problem. No, we believe, actually, and we have some science to back this up, so it's not just kind of blind faith, that the relationship and relational events are helpful not only to improve a relationship, but that can actually help a person who is depressed, who is anxious, who is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, right? Actually using relationships and using EFT to treat problems that have traditionally been seen as kind of, you know, in a silo, sort of individual issues. We really get people to learn how to use their relationship as a source of strength.
Absolutely. That's a powerful thing, that when you're in this secure relationship, then these other things, the depression, PTSD, like you said, those things can be resolved in that environment. That's powerful. So often in our whole culture looks at a lot of these things as individual, and no, we're not going to support couples therapy or families therapy, but really couples family and family therapy can help alleviate these so-called individual issues so successfully.
No, exactly, David. I mean, no one lives in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And even in our field, you know, for a really long time, and rightfully so, you know, we're very interested in understanding the person and the individual and how the mm-hmm. individual feels and thinks and behaves and why. But people live in social contexts. And everything they do, everything they feel, everything they think is necessarily influenced by everything that's going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the systemic elements of EFT really come into play, right? It's this real conviction that even for certain, not everything, and I have to say, I have at some times referred clients I've seen in couple therapy to individual therapy. I'm not talking about it as being a replacement. But for certain problems, I've actually seen it in some ways be more effective than kind of mm-hmm. traditional one-on-one therapy, because you've got the most important person, or in the context of family therapy, the most important people in the world for the clients, and that's where the change comes from.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's when working with families, so often people will say, well, come and fix Junior. I need you to work with my child. And my approach is, well, I could do that, but it's so much more effective if I work with everybody. So the more people we have there, the better. So, yeah, same thing, using the couple to help the individual is a powerful approach.
Yeah, and that comes, systemic elements are in there, but that also is really... attachment theory heavily informs mm-hmm. that perspective and that way of working with couples and families.
So on the show, we've had a couple of interviews with Deborah McNamara from the Neufeld Institute, who talked about attachment with mm-hmm. children, mm-hmm. particularly toddlers. So we've been talking about attachment with couples. How does EFT grow out of that view of attachment, which started off looking at children?
Well, if you're familiar with attachment theory, and the very first attachment theorist is John Bowlby, who mm-hmm. was himself a clinician, worked with children, and noticed that in the aggressive boys that he worked with in London at the Tavistock Institute, he noticed that they had all gone through some kind of, in some cases, very severe separation from their primary caregivers. So he developed this theory to try to understand, you know, what is it that makes people, human beings, seem to really need to have these kind of close bonds. And as you were saying, it started kind of as a theory of how bonds develop between children and their primary caregivers. But Bowlby also said, you know, these needs, the need to feel emotionally close to significant others, the need to feel safe and loved and supported, and then the very predictable emotional reactions that take place when something threatens that, you know, the fear, the sadness, and then maybe even if it keeps going on, the detachment. He said those are needs and reactions that persist, and this is Bowlby who said this, from the cradle to the grave.
Hmm.
So even at the beginning of the sort of the attachment perspective or attachment theory, there was this notion that, you know, we never grow out of this. And in the 1980s, in 1987, Cindy Hazan and Phil Shaver published the very first paper looking at attachment and what had come to be known as attachment styles, so typical ways of feeling and behaving in relationships. They looked at that in couples, and they found that, lo and behold, people tended to interact with and to feel about their significant others in romantic relationships in the very same way that young children do with their primary caregivers. So the fundamental dynamics are the same. Since Hazan and Shaver's 1987 paper, there have been about 500 studies of attachment in adulthood, and specifically in couples. So we now know that, yes, it's an analogous process, but there are some important differences. So in a parent-child relationship, it's not really two-way. I mean, the child might give the parent some affection or some positive feedback, might smile, but it's really the parent who's the caregiver and the child who is the person who's receiving that emotional care.
Mm-hmm.
In a couple relationship, it goes both ways. It's a two-way street. So both partners will be caregivers, and also on the receiving end of that kind of strong emotional bond. So in our culture, in our society, in North America, and in most Western cultures, as we mature, our relationship partners tend to become our primary attachment figures. In childhood, it tends to be our parents. And again, this depends on what the family arrangements are, but usually in a traditional household, it would be the parents. And then as we go into adolescence, you know, friends start to take on a really significant role, and some of them could be considered attachment figures. But most of us now in North America live in communities of two, and it's not written anywhere that that's a good thing necessarily. But our significant others tend to be our primary attachment figures. So it's an analogous process, but in adulthood, it's two ways. And then, of course, in a romantic relationship, there's a sexual component that we hope is to, and typically isn't part of a caregiver-child relationship. So there's that reciprocity, there's the sexual nature of the relationship that tends to be a bit different than a relationship between a child and caregiver. But the basic fundamental processes of needing to feel loved, feeling safe and relieved when that person is in our lives, and when we know and feel the presence of that person, the tendency to rely on that person to be there in times of stress, the tendency to want to share our joys and successes with that person, these are all things that are exactly the same in adulthood as they are in childhood.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there's so much there. I'm just thinking back to when we talked with Deborah McNamara about Neufeld's attachment theory. They talked about the different developmental phases of attachment from 0 to 6. So there's the physical touch, which is a huge important part of the couple relationship. There's the desire for sameness and loyalty. I'm blanking on the other ones, but these mirror what happens in couple relationships too, where we're desiring that physical proximity, we're desiring sameness and loyalty, emotional connection. So it's powerful that it what we experience as a child and caregiver that continues to grow into our other important relationships, particularly in a couple.
Absolutely, and it's normal and healthy. You know, some people might be hearing this and saying, oh, well, you know, that's not what I heard. I heard, you know, you have to be independent, and you have to be strong, and you have to have all of your ducks in a row before you can be in a couple relationship. And that flies in the face, that kind of thinking, of about 60 years of science and what we know about relationships. What we know is that in order to become independent and autonomous and strong and self-reliant, and these are all important things that we want for everybody, right? You know, or in some circles they'll talk about how important it is to be differentiated, you know, to not be enmeshed. That was a big way of talking about people who had these intense emotional reactions in their relationships for a long time. It is important. But the way in which human beings develop that independence, the way in which they become truly autonomous and independent, is when they have these really meaningful, special relationships in which they feel that they can get that love and support that they need. I mean, if you think about the most independent and self-reliant and self-sufficient and successful and psychologically together person or people you know, how many of them are completely alone and abandoned and zero?
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate that our society has pushed so much for independence and seeing that as a strength when it's good maybe down the road, but it's not something that we need to rush into to push our children into. And even as adults, it's our independence comes out of a strength of or a sense of being close together too.
It is a condition for independence. That's how I like to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So, for people that this is really piquing their interest, where would you recommend they go to get more information or help with their couple relationship?
Well, Sue Johnson has published a couple of books for the general public. She has got a number of academic books and scientific articles that are also pretty readily available. But the books for the general public that she's written, there's one that came out in 2008 called Hold Me Tight, in which she gives a general overview of emotionally focused therapy and also the different kinds of patterns. We were talking earlier about cycles and dances and the kinds of traps that couples fall into. And she really outlines those very, very well in the book Hold Me Tight, and gives practical advice in that book based on science. I can't emphasize that enough. This isn't the theory of the day, okay? This is from now. EFT has been researched for over 30 years, okay? So the advice that's in Hold Me Tight is from that wealth of knowledge that's been built up over time. So that's one excellent resource. Another one is a book that she wrote that basically summarizes, again, for the general public, the research on romantic love in adults and exactly what that's all about. And that's where she talks a lot about attachment, about some of the neurophysiological correlates of attachment, what actually goes on in our brains and hearts when we fall in love, when things become difficult in a relationship. That book is called Love Sense. So those are some great resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy, or ICEFT, does have a website, ICEFT.com, with a list of people who have been trained in this approach and who've been certified in the Emotionally Focused Therapy, or EFT, approach. And there are EFT therapists all over Canada, the States, in Europe, in Asia. It's becoming an approach that's becoming popular all over the world. And so that might be another excellent resource for people who are interested in maybe in getting help for their relationship.
Well, something David and I often talk about, too, when it comes to counseling or therapy, it's never too early, it's never too late to just get yourself in the door when reaching out and looking for help when it comes to having a healthy relationship together. Because I know Hold Me Tight, it has that byline of seven conversations for a lifetime of love. You don't have to worry if you're already a good way through that relationship. Everyone can take something. No matter how long they are in the relationship, how healthy or unhealthy it is, hey, a little bit of help and tuning up can go a long way too.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Greenman. This has been so much excellent information.
It's been fun.
Been great. So thank you again. This has been so much. I'm just kind of in heaven right now.
Right. Well, I'm happy to hear it. It is powerful stuff, isn't it?
It is. It is. So, yeah, it's bringing me back to so many. It's been so powerful in my life and, in the lives of people that I've encountered talking about this sort of information with.
Again, joining us on Heart to Heart with David Disty, it's Dr. Paul Griegman, clinical psychologist and professor of psychology at the Université du Québec en Outaouais. Great, again, to have him join us on the program. We'll take a quick commercial break. More still to come, though, with David Disty on All You Ever Wanted to Know and Heart to Heart. We're back here on All You Ever Wanted to Know, Heart to Heart with David Disty. And David, it was unfortunate that we had to let Dr. Griegman go, but still lots learned from him, obviously. Your face was beaming throughout the entire thing. I can tell you really did enjoy that. And just when it comes back to emotionally focused therapy, you see certainly a lot of value in what Dr. Griegman and also what Dr. Johnson has talked about in that book, Hold Me Tight. You just see this really works for people, hey?
Yeah, it seems to be so powerful because it's not just about behavior or what you can do differently, but it really gets to the root of what's happening, where you get locked into a way of seeing each other, a way of engaging together that is really damaging, that's really harmful to the relationship. So Sue Johnson in her book Hold Me Tight calls it the demon dialogues, where you're in this really bad cycle, bad pattern. She talks about a dance too, where you're dancing the same steps over and over again, but can't seem to get out of it.
I don't know if this kind of connects like the whole, demon steps, is it?
Or demon dialogues.
Demon dialogues, okay. I don't know if this kind of connects, but there's some times where I am having an argument with my wife and something will come into my mind and I know not to say it, right? It's in my head, like the thought's been put in there, and I don't know if there's that little voice that's like daring me, oh, why don't you say this? But I'm like, no, I'm not going to say that. And I was like, well, what's going on in there? I'm like, well, there's a thought that popped into my head, but I'm not going to say it. Well, what is it? I'm like, well,
it would be bad if I said it.
Exactly. So I don't want to say it. I don't believe in what it's telling me. I just know it's like the angel and the devil on my shoulder. The devil kind of prompt me, hey, you should throw this. And I just know if I even dream of bringing that out in the discussion, we're not going to get anywhere near resolving that issue. We're just throwing another log on the fire. And it's going to take even longer now to put it out.
Yeah, it's like you know where each other's raw spots are. Yeah. And that demon on your shoulder that you're talking about is saying, well, it would really feel good if you did this. Yeah. And honestly, sometimes it does feel good. It feels self-righteous that, yeah, I'm right in saying this, but it's not helpful. And so that angel on your shoulder is saying, well, sure, it could feel good for a moment, but you know it's going to blow up. You know it's going to, like you said, throw another log on the fire, so don't do it. But then some people are stuck in this where that angel isn't giving them that other voice. They're stuck in seeing their partner in the same negative light, and they keep on going around and around and around based on kind of assuming what the other person means, reading into it based on the history, which sure, granted, the history may have been rough and you've encountered these experiences before. But one thing that I really encourage couples to do when I'm seeing them in counseling is trust that they're trying something new too. So yes, when you engage in relationship with them in the past, it was pretty likely that they would do this same thing over and over again. But right now, they're trying to do something different too. So take a step, try something different, try something new. Mm-hmm. Try a different dance step rather than the same one that you've been on.
Yeah.
And trust that, you know what, maybe, just maybe, my partner's going to try this new dance step with me too.
The conversation that we had with Dr. Greenman in reference to how society has kind of geared us in the way of being able to do things on our own, it almost would really explain that influx, it seems like, of failing marriages, right? Mm. Where it seems like that comes part of the whole throwaway society that we've become in a lot of ways, that people think that, you know, it's not worth picking up the pieces and trying to start over. And the unfortunate reality that we witness is just a lot of people who just throw their hands up into the air and say, you know I made a vow all those years ago, better for worse, but they throw in the towel and they give up. Now, people like you, you're really trying to get people that say, no, you know, we can take steps here to realize what it was that made you fall in love with each other all those years ago, and that there was a lot of good there, and that this person is still that same person that they always were, that you fell in love with. Let's just be able to approach things like we may have been able to do when people first met, potentially.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that there are so many people that don't try to make things work. Now, there's sometimes where the relationship has gone too far. There have been things that are too damaging that a person can't get through and don't seem to be able to get through. But definitely come and seek help earlier, sooner rather than later. Makes it a whole lot easier for yourself if you work on something before it's gone too far.
Right.
But again, I've seen some amazing times where relationships that seemed like they were on their last leg turned around, large part because they're able to see each other in that soft light that Dr. Greenman talked about, being able to see that the primary emotion rather than seeing just the anger or the mean things that are said, being able to see that sadness, the hurt, the longing, the fear. That's a really powerful experience for couples.
Right. And I don't want people to necessarily use what I've just said as a way to say, well, now I got to stay in no matter how bad it gets kind of thing. You're right in saying that, you know, there is a point where, you know, there is a point of no return if there have been things that have happened that are then repeating. I think a good indicator, though, of really if someone really wants to try and make things better, it's that one person does come forward and say, hey, I really do think we need to look at getting help for us, right? It goes a long way in saying that, you know, if both people are willing to come towards working towards it, the greater likelihood of reconciliation or being able to have better discussions, how to have a better fight. I know that's part of a lot of pastors and their pre-marriage counseling is how to have a fight, right?
Yeah.
And so it certainly says a lot about a relationship and how much both people are willing to fight for it, willing to come forward for that help, rather than it's only one person's idea, and under no circumstances does that person want to even come close to seeing someone such as yourself.
Yeah, it is definitely more powerful. The more people we can have in the room, the better. So with family counseling, the more people that are there, the more powerful it is. Likewise, if we're looking to fix a couple relationship, or maybe not fix, might not be the right word, but improve a couple relationship, if we can have both people there working on it, absolutely, that's better.
Yeah.
But there are also times where one person is willing to come, and there can be things improved and changed through that.
Okay.
So if your partner's not willing to come for counseling, I wouldn't say that means there's no hope, but still come and see what you can do to grow and change too.
That's a very good point. I can recall as well, just going back, how something that you've often really strived for people, and I know online we've maybe started to see some of this too, people coming out and openly admitting to going to something like therapy or counseling, and to the shock of their friends, hey, I thought you guys are just fine and dandy, couldn't be happier. And in many cases, that is the truth. But they look at counseling or even couples therapy as just like a regular tune-up, like a car needing an oil change. How much more healthy it can be if you're regularly tuning up rather than waiting for the smoke to fume from the hood, basically.
Yeah, these things need to be looked at regularly. So like this book, Hold Me Tight, Seven Conversations for a Lifetime of Love. It's something that's been transformative in my marriage, but it's something that we need to go back to time and again. It's not like, oh, good, we fixed it all, it's good forever. But no, we need to go back again and again and say, well, let's have this discussion again, see what's going on in our relationship. So yeah, that tune-ups are vital.
So with emotionally focused therapy, I guess people might bring up the question and then, well, what sorts of other therapy are there? Why isn't it universal and just all the same for everyone?
Well, there are lots of different types of therapies, both individual and couples and family therapies. So emotionally focused therapy does have a lot of strong research behind it. There's another one that used to kind of be at odds with EFT, Gottman Method Couples Therapy, but which also has so much research behind it. So we're wondering, well, how can these two have so much research behind them? And they are so different. But then over the last decade or so, they've been looking at what's similar between Gottman Method Couples Therapy and EFT. And they're finding a lot of things. Like Dr. Greenman talked about stonewalling and criticism. And those are two terms that have come out of Gottman therapy that he also talks about now in terms of EFT. So we're looking at these different strong methods of counseling. As we're understanding them more, we're finding out what's common between them, and they're kind of growing together.
Yeah.
So it's powerful.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to, as well, conversations we've had about Triple P, the positive parenting program, how there are many different ways. Like it's not one shoe fitting all either in a lot of circumstances as well.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, even with Triple P, and we talked about attachment theory with Deborah McNamara, and there's some differences between the two, but they both talked about the importance of building that strong relationship. So Triple P talks about what you do in various situations, not prescribing it, but I think Jamie DeVos said there are 17 different ideas that they present to you and you can choose for them, but they're all based on being in good relationship with your child. And so there's, again, Triple P and Neufeld attachment theory, they're kind of merging too, growing together in a way.
Mm-hmm. Again, all you ever wanted to know heart-to-heart with David Disty, if you need help in any sort of way, and maybe you're looking at therapy or counseling, really do encourage you. You can reach out to David, who is a certified counselor. And Dave, why don't you give your information again if people want to get a hold of you or anything like that?
So, yeah, you can give me a call at 306-316-0101 or email me at ddisty@gmail.com. And that info's on the Rock website, too.
Mm-hmm. And again, a reminder for people, too, if they want to maybe get started, introduce themselves a bit more to emotionally focused therapy. Again, Dr. Sue Johnson, we talked about her with Dr. Greenman earlier on. She has some books as well.
One that I'd really recommend that kind of gives an overview of attachment theory and EFT is Love Sense by Sue Johnson. Now, that one, our Yorkton Library has an audio book copy of that, so a lot easier for people to go through. It most definitely helped me get through it. But then Hold Me Tight, it's something that I often recommend to couples that come and see me. It's a book that goes through different aspects of emotionally focused therapy and actually builds to the point where there are 7 conversations that you have together. So Hold Me Tight is a book for a couple to work on together. And again, like I said before, it's been powerful in my life, and I recommend it, strongly recommend it for all couples.
Okay. Now, just to give a brief overview of some of those conversations exactly, how does that work? It's not like it's giving people a script that, okay, person number one says this, person number two says this, or is it like that?
No, it builds through, so there's like 70 or so pages that talk about the foundations for emotionally focused therapy, and then you get into those 7 conversations. So it's things that talking about what is the demon dialogue that you guys get into? What is the cycle, this negative cycle that you experience? And then asking, what are the raw spots that you push? What are the buttons that you push in your partner? And how do you need to avoid those, pushing those buttons? So it's conversations like those. And then with that basis of feeling, knowing deeply, intimately that your partner is on your side, it's with that basis that you can go and revisit the rocky moments, the times when you've had conflict that have gone poorly. And how can you revisit that in a way that will make this conflict go better?
Well,
so it's conversations like those.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for being here once again. It's been great to have you join us on Heart to Heart. Again, one more time, 316-0101 for people, right?
Yep, absolutely. And I do have to say as well that I do use elements of emotionally focused therapy when I work with couples, but I'm not a certified practitioner of emotionally focused therapy. So I do have to make that disclaimer there.
All right, fair enough. Great to have you here again, David, this is all the time we have for today's program. Until next time, have yourself a wonderful day and be blessed.